My guest at this time is Teresa Payton. She served as White House Chief Information Officer during the George W. Bush administration. She is now CEO of the cybersecurity consulting firm Fortalis Solutions. For the next few moments, we'll touch on the assertions of former Trump administration figure Omarosa Manigault-Newman that she secretly recorded conversations with President Trump and White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, with the latter supposedly happening in the Situation Room, which is a sensitive, compartmented information facility, otherwise known as a SCIF. How does something like this happen? What are the possible legal consequences for doing something like this, if it's actually true? And what does it say about government vulnerabilities to far more hostile forces if Omarosa can pull this off? And Teresa, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me on. And boy, if all of this is true, it's fairly serious.
Oh, it certainly is. So for those who aren't familiar with DC speak, exactly what is a SCIF and why are so many people shocked that a conversation was allegedly recorded in there?
Yeah, so a SCIF is, and you said it exactly right, it's a secured facility. It means classified conversations, classified phone calls, classified documents are handled within that facility. And so oftentimes that facility has no windows. There's a series of doors that you have to punch in codes and slide cards into. There's a whole sense of protocol. You can't accidentally trip into like a conference room that's a SCIF. It's very obvious you're going in. And as a matter of fact, there's typically a series of either storage boxes or actual lockers with keys. And as you go by, you can't miss them. They're not hidden. And you're told to put into those both work and personal smartwatches, fitness trackers, tablets, laptops, any type of recording devices, and anything that connects to the internet is supposed to go into these compartments or these lockers that are outside where the classified information is. The reason being is you never know if those devices are compromised and could be turned into listening and recording devices that could be used by the adversary, and or if they would, you know, potentially be connecting to other devices that could be in the room that have been cleared to be in the room for phone calls and video conferences, et cetera, and creating a compromise within that network. And so as we all know, for example, Chelsea Manning had removed classified information using CD-ROMs that were marked, I think, Britney Spears, of all things, and that was a violation of that. If this turns out to be true, that a recording device was in the White House Situation Room of all places, that would be incredibly a serious breach of not only trust, but a breach of a classified facility on a level that is very, very serious.
I would imagine when White House staff or staff at any government facility dealing with a sensitive area like that are probably forced to sign some things before they take on the job. But one of the things I saw today, it was a tweet from Lawrence Tribe, the constitutional attorney. I believe he teaches up at Harvard, probably spent more time at the White House in the last administration. But nonetheless, he says he's been in there. And he says, yes, he described it just like you did, where you need to put all your electronic devices in the lockers and so forth. And he said there were signs clearly telling everyone to do that, but it was largely on the honor system for folks to do that. So he's not surprised that she actually didn't get caught if she didn't want to put that in the locker. So are we really operating in these sensitive facilities on the honor system?
Well, in some cases, you could put it that way. There's not a bouncer at the door frisking everybody and giving you a pat down to make sure that you're not sneaking in a device because you've gone through a clearance process to be in there to begin with. Mm. And so to be in there to begin with, you've gone through a series of classified training classes where you're told the capabilities of the adversary. You are told why you are not to bring these types of devices into a SCIF, and you sign an agreement that says you understand your duty of care and responsibility to protecting classified information, and that includes not bringing these devices into a SCIF. It also includes not having conversations, even if you think you're being cute and talking in code like you're James Bond at a coffee shop. You're not supposed to have conversations. So there is a series of training that you go through before you're even given a badge that would let you anywhere near a classified facility. And so, yeah, you're somewhat on the honor system, so to speak, because you are a trained individual and you signed a document saying, I understand the training, I understand the law, and I will follow it. And so, yeah, nobody's frisking you at the door because they expect you to implement the training that you were given and to honor the agreement that you signed.
We're talking with Teresa Payton. She served as White House Chief Information Officer during the George W. Bush years at the White House. Teresa, how concerned should we be that foreign powers could be doing such a thing when they either visit the White House or potentially infiltrate any number of sensitive parts of our government?
Now, you know, as it relates to something like that, so a non-employee actually coming on the grounds, they would actually go through a series of, you know, kind of screenings and, you know, metal detectors and things like that. And there would be a conversation with people around, you know, kind of, here are the lockers, please put your things in the lockers. And so there would be, again, could somebody sneak something in? I mean, you want to sort of, you kind of walk that fine line between diplomacy and patting down somebody you're getting ready to have a conversation with. But there are things when there are large meetings, there are means and methods that can tell the people who are running that facility whether or not the individuals came in the room on the honor system and did not honor the honor system. And so they can give sort of one last reminder that people are not following the rules. And that typically goes on when there are more sort of official meetings and official business and people who are visiting that are not employees of the White House proper.
You were there. It's been about a decade now since the end of the George W. Bush administration. How much more complicated has this effort to protect sensitive data gotten with the advance of technology?
Oh, it's incredibly complex. And, you know, I do have conversations from time to time with people that were in the last administration, this current administration, just offering advice and counsel and a perspective to try and help them as much as I can. I mean, it's a very small club of people who have had that responsibility. And so I'm always available to them as a sounding board. And yes, it has become just even more enormous pressure on the individuals who have the responsibility for securing the classified information, for securing those facilities, and reminding people, you know, I know you don't think of that as a smartwatch, but it is. That's got to come off. You know, people almost, it's like they have the, you know, fitness trackers. You know, I know you're not thinking about that as a potential breach device. You know, the phone's more obvious, the tablet's more obvious, but then there's these other smart devices that people take with them that they kind of forget about because they're ubiquitous and they're part of our everyday lives. And so that as well as the motive and the capability of the adversary continue to improve. So as we kind of improve the defenses at the White House, the adversary realized, oh, this is getting really hard, and they don't suddenly say, you know, this is so hard, I should just go be a good person and bake pies for my neighbor. They up their game. And so there's this constant, it's almost like an arms race, if you will, on the cybersecurity side to stay one step ahead of the adversary.
So, Teresa, you've helped to protect our nation's sensitive information. You now are in the consulting world. So what's your quick bullet points here, whether it's government facilities, whether it's contractors who do a lot of work with the government or what have you? What are the best ways to protect sensitive data and facilities?
Yeah, the best way to do that, especially given what's just occurred, is you need to rebrief all of the employees and the contractors to let them know. I know some conversations have happened with Omarosa this morning. I heard her on the news mentioning, I'm looking at my rights under the whistleblower program. Each group needs to rebrief all of their employees and contractors to say, here's what you can and cannot do under the whistleblower guidelines. Here's what you can and cannot do when you go to these facilities. You need to make sure those signs are front and center, and maybe even station a person who is reminding people, just in case you've forgotten, I need to make sure you're putting things in the locker. So all of those kind of safeguards and sort of upping our A game on the protection and the defensive side can really go a long way, especially after an incident like this.
You mentioned the legal angle that Omarosa is taking here, but if someone is caught intentionally doing this, and I don't even know if intentionality plays into it. It probably does in terms of severity. But what are the legal consequences for doing that?
Yeah, and so we'll leave this up to the legal teams to determine, especially whether or not this fits whistleblower guidelines and what the protections are. But this is considered a grave security breach, and so there's a lot of different actions that the legal team could choose to take. Some of those actions could that they could entertain are revoking a security clearance, recommending somebody as an individual to not clear again. They could take legal action. That's typically rare unless secrets were sold to the adversary or a real grave breach happened. And so there's a lot of legal remedies that could be taken here, and it's going to be up to the White House counsel and legal teams to decide, you know, which actions they choose to take, if any at all.
And lastly, does it matter more legally or policy-wise whether she taped a conversation in the SCIF or taped the president in the Oval Office?
Now, that is a really interesting question. And, you know, so first of all, there will be some laws around just taping an individual without asking their permission first. Mm-hmm. So there's the District of Columbia laws, and then there's the White House laws. And so it's going to depend on what the Chief of Staff has said around personal recording devices being used in meetings outside of SCIFs, and then the SCIF is kind of its own entity, which will fall under Department of Defense classified handling rules, as well as kind of White House Chief of Staff rules. So that there will be a little bit of a subtle difference there, but there will be some White House as well as the District of Columbia rules that will come into play as well.
Fascinating. Always impressed by the people who can stay on top of all this emerging technology and the procedures that need to be in place. Teresa, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on today. Hopefully this was helpful to your listeners.
Oh, I think it was. Teresa Payton served as White House Chief Information Officer during the George W. Bush administration. She's now CEO of the cybersecurity consulting firm Fortalice Solutions. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.